Of course, but, it's just festering at that or multiplying in your body.
Right.
So if we go to the virus type diseases, what kind of symptoms do we deal with on that? And what's the timeline about the same, couple weeks?
Well, it can be longer, as I said, with that. Now, one of the things I don't want to get people all stirred up here, because neither you or I are medical doctors, and our first thing is that we say, if you get a tick bite, is talk to your physician, you know, and notify him that you do. And especially now if we start getting more some of the virus diseases. But I would admit that the virus diseases are very rare here in the state of Maine.
Mm-hmm.
We've had a few over the last 5 years. I think over the last 5 years, we might have had four deaths. So that's almost one a year. But so, yeah, it just takes longer oftentimes for the virus symptoms to appear.
And would they be similar, flu-like? That,
they could be similar. Yeah. Also with the viruses, a good percentage of the people that's had it may have lifelong neurological symptoms.
Hmm.
So, you know.
Yeah.
But I just don't want to go down that road
too
far.
I understand. Yeah. But it's just so if you've had a bite and you're getting symptoms, it's worth it to check with your doctor
rather than
ignore it.
I think the takeaway message is if you know you've been bitten by a tick and it's summertime and you think you've got a summer cold, or an allergy, it may not hurt to have it checked out by your doctor.
Yeah. And it doesn't get better. If you have it, it's got to be dealt with.
Most of them do, You know, it's like any, bacteria, the body can eventually overcome it, but certainly with antibiotics and help, it's much better.
Yeah, and sooner is better than later, for sure. Okay, and we had some cold spells last winter, but it really didn't knock down the population at all.
No, the thing is that you figure they're pretty much down in the duff, in the leaf litter.
Yeah,
and if you want to think about it, those are tiny little compost piles.
Yeah,
because they're all decaying during the winter, if you have a compost bin outside, even though it's really cold. That's still generating heat, and the stuff is decaying.
Sure.
So you figure those ticks are down in that leaf litter, and if that's decaying a little bit, even though it might be zero outside where they are, it could be 25, 30 degrees or something.
Yeah, it's like going to Florida for a tick.
Right.
Yeah.
And we have other species that are starting to knock on our door too. The interesting one I think is the Lone Star tick. And we find a few of those every year. We haven't been able to find an established population, but we believe they probably are here. And the interesting thing about that tick is, and I think we've talked about this before, that if you get bitten by them, some people, after being bitten by the Lone Star tick, become allergic to red meat and dairy products. So some people can get over it, and other people, it's lifelong. So,
okay.
So, so you figure, boy, there's some weird things that can happen because
of
ticks. And I think that's why people just hate and fear ticks. I've had so many turkey hunters tell me that they've given up turkey hunting because where they usually like to sit is right on that woods and field interface.
Yeah.
And that's where the ticks really are too.
Yeah.
And they just say, you sit there and you can just watch them crawl all over you. And,
we had an episode a couple of years ago in our old house. We had these hosta plants around a bird feeder. Mm-hmm. And so seed is falling on the ground. And I assume maybe mice were getting down there. And they were covered with ticks. My wife went out to garden and she was, I got the phone call. it was overwhelming.
Yep.
There were so many of them. And it's like, okay. The thing that I, as I watch people burning blueberry fields, I think, gee, why don't we just burn the lawn? But it's that interface. They like to be on tall grass because it's easier for them to get on. And if you keep your lawn mowed, I would assume you're ahead of it a little bit in terms of critters.
Are. And the interesting thing about them, of course, most people or a lot of people come in contact with the dog tick.
Mm.
And luckily, right now in the state of Maine, the dog tick doesn't have any disease organisms associated with it.
Okay.
We do test them for different things to stay ahead of it, because one of the probably more common ones that people have probably heard of is Rocky Mountain Spotted Fever.
Right.
And that is in Western Mass, so it's not that far away.
Hmm.
And so we keep testing for it to see if, you know.
And so generically, if we're looking, we got a tick on us, how can we, is there a simple way just to determine the difference between a dog tick and a deer tick?
Well, the first thing is usually, you know, you always have to be careful when you say size, but there is a big difference in the size. The dog tick is probably about twice the size of the deer tick.
Okay.
But once they start feeding, those females just blow right up.
Right, but an engorged tick is obviously.
Yeah, then it's, oh, wow, look at the size of this thing.
Yeah.
And then it's harder to tell.
Yeah.
But the deer tick is kind of has a shield on the back of it that's dark colored and that almost black.
Mm-hmm.
And then its bottom part, called the abdomen, is kind of a reddish brown.
Okay.
Whereas the dog tick, which is larger, that shield on the back, instead of being a solid color, is all streaked. It's white and brown.
Right.
So that's the easy way to tell the difference. If it's a solid color, it's most likely, from what we encounter, even though we have like 17 species of ticks that's been found in Maine, the most two common ones are the dog tick and the black-legged tick. And as I say, that's the easy difference between them.
Okay. We're going to take a break. It's 8:30. We'll be back in a minute. We're talking with Jim Dill from Cooperative Extension Pest Management about pests, of which we're still in creepy crawlies. So stay with us. We'll be right back. It's 8:35. It is hot and cold. It is Saturday morning. We got Jim Dill in Studio B, spacious studio over there through the glass, whatever Rick calls it. I just want to tell you about our friends at General Appliance over in Brewer on Center Street. New management. Gary Coleman is taking over for Alan, and same phone number, same fine service, same stuff, gas appliances, composting toilets, all that good stuff. And the phone number is 989-4341. Center Street and Brewer. It's that easy. That number's the same, 989-4341. The number to remember if you're looking for appliance service and parts. And he's just stepped into the big shoes that used to be Alan's. So that's good. And over in the spacious studio, whatever, B, 2B, 1C, I forget what he calls it. It's there's no number. Is there a number on the door?
No, I don't see anything on
number
the door.
Number on the door.
Nope.
This is the George Hale studio. That's what it is. So, Jim, in terms of keeping, getting to a point where the bugs ain't getting on you, the ticks in particular.
Yep.
There's not, well, you could treat your clothing with permethrin.
Permethrin is probably the best repellent to keep them off you, off the clothing especially.
Mm-hmm.
But with permethrin, you always want to make sure that it only goes on your clothing. That one does not go on your skin.
Okay.
Now, like DEET and some of the other repellents work okay. Mm-hmm. Those are to be applied directly to the skin.
Right.
But permethrin on the clothing seems to work the best.
Okay.
And part of the reason is, as you know, depending on the situation, if you're out there walking around and hiking, if you've got long pants on, which we recommend if you're in the tick area,
sure,
that you know you have it treated so they're not going to get on there, and it repels them as well as it can kill them too. So,
do they tend to be attracted to a given color?
No.
Okay.
Because with the tick, what it does, it's usually, you know, when I say usually, it's probably 18 inches and below up from the ground.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the reasons is, especially with the black-legged tick or deer tick, is it's very sensitive to humidity and drying out. So, you know, you hear people say, oh, well, you know, they're dropping off the trees on me. Well, the problem would be with the black-legged tick, of course, the higher up it gets,
drier.
The drier the air is probably going to be. So if you're down close to the ground, you know, in that grass and mm-hmm. stuff, it's probably a pretty good place for them. So anyway, they just climb up on the grass or a twig and they hang on with their back legs and they wave the front legs around, and that's called questing.
Right.
And anything that walks by, they grab onto it.
Yeah. So that brings up a question. As I mentioned earlier, keeping your lawn mowed helps. If you're mowing the lawn, you got ticks on your lawn, and they're on a piece of grass,
yeah.
And you mow it, is that tick going to get flung away?
Yep. You know, I mean, it's going to get flung away. It probably may or may not do anything to it, meaning...
Oh, yeah, yeah.
But,
I mean,
it's just gonna
you're dislodging it from
yeah.
the area.
Right,
so
and blows it out.
If you if you mow properly, you can drive them off. And, of course, this goes with my wonderful theory of killing the lawn every year so you don't have to mow it, because once the lawn is dead, the ticks are dead too.
Right. But remember, going back to what we just said with the black-legged tick, it doesn't like dry, so it's not going to be out in the middle of your lawn.
Okay.
It's just too dry. The deer, the dog tick, however, you know, that seems to be everywhere. At the office where we are, we're out a little bit, and there's some fields and woods behind the office, and there's a lot of, especially dog ticks there.
Yeah.
And they'll come climbing right up the picnic table in the backyard. So
that's right, nice.
Behind the building. So, you know, they can withstand some pretty dry conditions. So something like that could be in the middle of your lawn, but the deer tick most likely is not going to be. Now, after I say that, though, if you've got a lot of plantings around mm-hmm. shrubbery and yep. that type of thing, well, that's a whole different story, because that's not just this big, vast lawn area. And, you know, and of course, mice like to hide around that type of thing, too, and you know, they can move the ticks around.
Okay. I got a couple questions here. Please ask Jim, what proportion of ticks in Maine are Lyme infected, and is there a difference in different parts of the state?
Yes, there absolutely is. from everything that we've had coming in, down in the coastal in southern Maine, it's where the highest percentage mm-hmm. is of infected ticks. And mostly as you move northward, then it gets to be a lower percentage that has the organism in them.
So in terms of deer ticks coming in from the coastal southern Maine area, what percentage would you say are infected?
Probably in coastal and southern Maine, I would say probably 40 or 50% or more. Yeah, but as you move upward, as I say, it's less. And you also find that you'll have co-infections, and by that I mean it might have a Lyme disease in it and anaplasmosis, or anaplasmosis and babesiosis. Those are the three major ones that we're looking for, bacterial. Mm-hmm. And some ticks can have a double or triple threat from because they have one or three, all three of the organisms in it. So you know, and you can get them, you know, from one tick bite, you could get two diseases, technically.
And I know we over the years, I've had this discussion with you about the ecological importance of black flies, which I understand, you know, fish eat them.
Right.
Ticks, I'm kind of, you know, scratch my head and, like, think, is this some kind of a pox that we have going on?
I know. People ask me all the time, you know, what good are ticks? And, there's nothing that I can see.
Yeah.
that they're good.
I guess the only thing they do is maybe cull out weaker animals that get them, but they probably wouldn't be weakened if it wasn't for the ticks.
Well, you know, and very truthfully, most of the wild animals you see, even though they're hosts for both the tick and the diseases, even though they will test positive for the disease, it doesn't seem to have huge impacts on the population of wildlife.
Yeah.
You know, it's like you don't see dead mice dropping all over the place
because
they've got, you know, Lyme disease.
But we have seen moose that have been seriously infested.
Yeah, and that's different. And part of the reason there is, you know, a moose can have 100,000 ticks on them.
Yeah.
And, you know, they're as big as your little finger, the tip of your little finger when they're engorged. So you can just imagine, you know, how much blood they're sucking out of a moose during the winter.
How's breakfast going out there in Radioland this morning, huh? We always have that caveat for people when we have you on, Jim. Nothing personal. I got a text message here. You can comment on this. The turkeys are the reason the ticks are here.
No. You know, that's what people seem to think, that, you know, they brought them in.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, do they have them on them? Yeah, they do. But they're pretty good groomers. And, you know, like you see most birds grooming themselves. So if they find anything on them, they're going to pick them off. So they're no more of a transportation system than any other animal that moves around. Yes, a turkey can get up and fly a long distance, but there's probably other birds that migrate that may be a bigger source than, you know, turkeys. And you know, the other question I get is the flip side of that, and they'll say, oh, turkeys are great. You know, I don't have any ticks around because we have a flock of wild turkeys, and they eat all the ticks.
Yeah.
And the thing is, if you think about how tiny those ticks are, their turkeys aren't, you know, they'll eat one or two if they come across them, but they're not searching them out, just like chickens aren't searching them out, or guinea fowl.
Yeah.
So we haven't any real good research that shows that any of those critters are really, really good at eating enough ticks to make a difference. Now, as soon as I say that, you know, people are going to call in and say, well, I have a flock of chickens in my backyard, and since I've had them, I haven't had a tick. You know, yeah, that's good. You know, they do eat them, and I haven't got a good answer for you why that is the case, but usually when they've done research, they don't find that they go and, you know, clean out your backyard of ticks.
So being associated with the university, do we have a lot of grad students doing research on these topics?
We do have some grad students, yeah, and it's becoming a bigger issue because, as we just talked about a minute ago, you know, we've been doing this for a long time, and it's probably been the last 6 or 7 years that we've really been talking about ticks. So it's been the last 6 or 7 years there's been more and more interest. And as a matter of fact, it was probably 6 or 7 years ago when they hired a vector biologist, entomologist at campus, Allison Gardner. And she does research on ticks and mosquitoes.
Okay.
I think originally it was kind of like they were thinking mosquitoes when they hired her, but as soon as she got here, it was more like, hey, ticks are much more important.
Yeah. So let's go over to other blood-sucking insects. We haven't talked mosquitoes yet.
And mosquitoes again this year has been a real interesting one. It's been up and down as far as the water has been this spring.
Yeah.
It's been dry in areas, and it's been wet in other areas.
Yeah.
So, again, it's very spotty. Now, I've heard someone was saying just recently that the 30-day forecast, though, is for it's going to be a little bit wetter than it has been. So if that is the case, then we may be looking for a good crop of mosquitoes to come up.
Mm-hmm.
But I'll tell you, in my backyard, there seem to be plenty of mosquitoes.
Yeah.
But I've been other places where I'd expect to be, you know, kind of flooded with mosquitoes, and there are very few.
Yeah.
So, it's very spotty across the state. And, again, as we talked, black flies, they like that nice, swift, clean, running water. Mosquitoes are just the opposite. They like, you know, still, stagnant water. So anything that will hold water, stopped-up gutters, bird baths, you know, 5-gallon buckets outside of the tool shed, you name it, empty those at least once a week. And I think bird baths are one thing that people don't think about ever emptying. You know, they just pour a little more water in or whatever.
Yeah.
It doesn't take very much water to grow a mosquito. I think I've seen that a tablespoon of water can give rise to a mosquito. So it really doesn't take much. So
is there a time, excuse me, a time of day or, and this is kind of a broad question, time of day or a temperature area, sector, whatever we want to call it, where, let's start with mosquitoes, where mosquitoes like to feed and actually go after people?
Yeah, it's that's species dependent. Mm-hmm. You know, most people, when you think of mosquitoes, you think, you know, kind of in the evening, you know, it's getting evening time, mosquitoes are going to be coming out, yada, yada. Mm. Part of that reason is oftentimes that as you get into the evening, winds die down.
Okay.
And mosquitoes are very poor flyers. So if there's a breeze, they don't do very well on finding a host.
Mm-hmm.
They, again, depending on the species, you can have them in broad daylight feeding on you, and some feed only at night. So it is, you know, there's no set, oh, it's, you know, 75 degrees and sunny, you're not going to have a mosquito bite you.
Okay.
Well, you step into the shade and they're waiting for you.
Yeah.
Or some of them will fly out into that sun and get you too. The best hope is breeze. And to be honest, I think this year we've had a lot of breezy days.
Yeah.
And I think that's part of the reason why people are saying, oh, gee, I haven't seen many mosquitoes around. And I think it's possibly because it's been so windy. The mosquitoes are just not having good luck finding us. They may be finding rodents and that type of thing in the woods, or smaller mammals, but they're just not finding us.
And what about black flies? Is there any time of day or temperature that they're just happy to be out all the time?
Yeah, black flies are out pretty much all the time, but you don't find them out much after dark. They're daytime flyers, nice, sunny, bright weather. They're out looking for you. Just like, you know, one thing we never really talk about in here much, and those are deer flies, horse flies, moose flies.
Yeah.
Same thing. I mean, when they land on you, sometimes you know it when they take a bite out of you.
Yeah. But they're usually sunny time of the day.
They're sunny time of the day, too. Same with the black fly. The mosquito's the only one that kind of 24 hours, depending on the species, is out.
Yeah.
Yep. You can't escape.
And the deer fly, moose fly, although I've seen them, they really come into their own in summer.
Right. Warm. Yep. Warm.
Yeah.
Like the deer fly or whatever you want to call them, they often sit on foliage or even on the ground, and they just wait for you to walk by. And if you notice, they have a territory. Mm. You can be walking down, say, in a wooded road or something, in a woods road, and all of a sudden one will come up and start buzzing around your head, and you get 15 or 20 feet or 25 feet down the road, and it's gone. And if it hasn't landed and bitten you. And so they seem to have this territory.
Mm-hmm.
They're kind of an interesting critter from that standpoint.
Yeah.
That's not to say there won't be another one waiting for you 25 feet away, but that particular one will often go away. It doesn't stay with you the whole time.
And any diseases associated with those guys?
We've been looking at that. We haven't seen anything here in Maine on humans.
Mm-hmm.
But we're trying to investigate if there's some things that maybe some other animals, like your pets, can get and that type of thing.
Yeah. Got a text message here. Please ask, do bug zappers do much to control mosquitoes and other biting bugs?
The black-like bug zappers don't. And part of the reason is a lot of different insects are attracted to the bug zappers. And what you get on those is a lot of moths coming in, you know.
Sure.
And even those big, giant Luna moths and stuff, they love to come to black lights, you know. And they hit in there and it burst of flames probably. But mosquitoes aren't attracted much to black lights. Not really. They are attracted more to regular light than black light.
Well, there's other mosquito-type traps that will give off maybe a little CO2 or yep. some other attractant, and right. that'll draw a mosquito
right.
in.
And those, that's what those are based on. Like when we do trapping, we have all kinds of different. We have a carbon dioxide and light combination. Mm-hmm. We have heat and CO2. So there's all kinds of combinations, but mosquitoes pretty much zero in on body heat mm-hmm. and CO2. Now, some research shows that they actually do zero in on some other scents, meaning perfumes and and soaps and that type of thing. And I don't know if over time they've adapted to associate somehow that smell with the meal. Mm. Versus, you know, CO2 is the big thing.
Well, a lot of people seem to swear about, I think it's Avon Skin So Soft.
Yep.
Does
yep.
a good job of keeping these critters away.
Right.
That's an interesting one that seems to have stood the test of time to some degree, at least. My wife swears by it.
Right. And they actually make a Skin So Soft repellent, too.
Yep.
And part of that is due to... Skin So Soft is kind of an oily material,
mm-hmm.
and so black flies especially do not do well on, you know, oily areas, yeah. skin and that type of thing. But you're right, it has been one, and that's right, that's a repellent. And that's, I think, what a lot of the repellents are based on is odor.
Yeah.
So why wouldn't some other odors attract them? So, yep.
You know, when I used to work in the woods many previous lives ago, we weren't dealing with ticks. We were dealing with black flies, and mm-hmm. they could be in the middle of nowhere pretty oppressive. And a lot of the guys, we were wearing hard hats because we were doing timber stand improvement, would smear the top of their hard hat with baby oil.
Yep.
So the black flies would all be stuck on the hard hat.
Yep.
I couldn't do it. I mean, it was just it was messy enough just messing around with. And I at that time, I don't think I even used any kind of dope. I was always concerned about stuff like DEET and whatever,
right.
being, you know, smearing it all over your person. I'd almost rather deal with the black fly bite.
Absolutely.
But, you know, we wore long, I guess I probably had a t-shirt on, so.
Yeah.
But I never really was plagued by them as much as, you know, some folks just draw them. They get sweet blood. I got bad blood, apparently.
Right. And some people are quite allergic to the bites, too.
Yeah. Yep.
You find that a lot of times people moving to Maine when they first get here, are really susceptible to the bites. So I don't know if over time we get more acclimated to them or what. But
well, it's kind of like a vaccine.
You just
keep getting inoculated, and eventually, or like a peanut allergy.
That's right.
Yeah,
they give you little peanuts every now. Yeah.
Mosquitoes. I get them. They're bad. We got to take a break. It's 8:55. It is hot and cold. Phone number is 1-800-966-1039. Text line is 601-207-4478. We got a whole other hour to talk about pests and insects and anything that Jim deals with.
So right. Brown-tail moth.
We haven't even started that one. Oh, my God. We'll be back in a little bit. Thank you.
On a star, carry moonbeams home in a jar, and be better off than you are. Or would you rather be a mule? A mule is an animal with long, funny ears. He kicks up at anything he hears. His back is brawny and his brain is weak. Just plain stupid with a stubborn streak. And by the way, if you hate to go to school, you may grow up to be a mule. How would you like to swing on a star, carry moonbeams home in a jar, and be better off than you are? Or would you rather be a pig? Thank you.
ain't me worried, baby. You I had to lose.
Hey, we're back. It's 9:06. It's hot and cold Saturday morning. We have Jim Dill with us from Cooperative Extension Pest Management. And I'm trying not to get the blues talking about bugs, but man, he's got all the bloodsuckers going here this morning. So, Jim, before we start talking about the other critters that you brought with you, we've got a bunch of emails or text messages here. no particular order. I think they're all bug related. First one. So, if you're driving in your car and you have mosquitoes in the car with you buzzing around, open the window a little bit or turn on the defrost so the moving air will confuse them and they won't land on you.
That's a good idea. Plus, once you open the window, you can suck them right out too.
Yeah.
So,
yeah, yep. They're weak flyers, as you said.
Yeah.
I'm not sure I understand this one, but I never really raises black flies to bite. Rick Tyler. Okay. ticks have gotten worse over the past decade or more because people have stopped burning their fields in the spring. I'm tempted to burn my field just to keep them out of my yard. It certainly would keep them away till the grass sprouts again, and then they're going to come back in, right?
Right. I'm sure that helps somewhat, of course, because it's going to kill any ticks that may be out there. As we said earlier, you know, the deer tick and that type of thing, they're going to be in the woods and in the you know, duff. And
it's really that interface between the lawn and the woods where it's moister in the forest, where they really thrive.
And that's, if you think about it, if you watch, that's where the animals walk, too.
Yep.
You know, I mean, yes, a deer will come out in the middle of the field and feed, but if it's going to walk, it will walk down that, you know, edge of that field for a long time, a lot of times, before it actually comes into the field.
Yep. Okay.
So, yep.
Let's see. Does he think of mosquito bites or mosquito dunks if you throw them in water? They seem to work at my camp.
Yeah. That's BTI, Bacillus.
Bates, I'm sorry.
Yeah, Bates, yeah.
Yeah.
So it's BTI, Bacillus thuringiensis israelensis.
Mm-hmm.
And it does work very well. It's a bacteria, and as we said, mosquitoes like to feed in, you know, stagnant water. So what they do is that when those dunks are put in there, they dissolve, and that's the bacteria, and they suck it in. Okay. And it does kill them. It works very well. Now, the situation is with those that they work in, you know, a good in very small areas. And also, if there's an outlet to it, you got to make sure that you have permits from the state to use those. These are permitted materials.
Okay. BT is a permitted material?
Yeah, just because they just don't want it getting all around, and you know, because it will kill any diptera type of an insect. So there may be, you know, in some areas, do you want to kill all the black flies? Well, that may sound good, but there are chironomids and other things that the fish depend on, especially mm-hmm. small fish, that you could wipe out a whole stream of that type of an insect.
Okay.
So there are permits that you have to get for certain sizes.
Okay. Please ask how effective certain plants like citronella, lavender, mint, et cetera, are in keeping mosquitoes away.
You know, that's interesting. I got to do an interview on that particular topic on Monday.
Mm-hmm.
And for the most part, they don't work very well. Even citronella candles are not super effective.
Mm.
As I said earlier, I think it'd be more effective if you had a fan sitting there blowing on you than trying to use a citronella candle.
Mm-hmm.
And they do have plants that they do say mint and lavender, as was just said, but they're not super good at doing that.
How about black flies? Are they better? They're better flyers than the mosquitoes are.
They are, but again, windy days have a tendency to keep them
okay.
at bay, too.
So the thing to do is have a fan on the porch.
Right, absolutely.
Yeah. Just tuned in. Brown-tailed moths have decimated the greenery of two crabapple trees. Will this kill the trees?
No.
Okay. So that and that brings up the next topic at hand. Itchy time.
Itchy brown-tailed moths.
Itchy brown-tailed moths.
Yeah. Well, that's a good segue in, like you said, for the brown-tailed moth. Hardwood trees, including crabapple, it would probably take 3 or 4 years in a row of of complete defoliation before it would have a real impact on the tree. Mm-hmm. Now, however, if you had something like that that was feeding on a pine tree, 1 year defoliation would pretty well do it in.
Really?
Just because, you know, what you think about of a pine tree, it keeps its needles all the time. It never loses it. Whereas as a hardwood, they drop their leaves every year anyway. So depending on when it happens, as long as they've had some chance to store up some reserves during the course of the year, which in most cases you would, you know, that's why I say 1 year defoliation won't kill it. 2 years, well, you're starting to maybe weaken it. 3 years, worse. And maybe after 4 years, it may not recover.
Now, is the brown-tailed moth in a tent like tent caterpillars?
No. What you see, we'll get to that. What you've been seeing around recently are the tent caterpillars.
Right.
They've been out now probably 2-3 weeks.
Yep.
And people do confuse that. They say, oh, the tents. Because if you remember, most people will tell you during the winter to go out and clip the tents of the brown-tailed moth. And the brown-tailed moth, the eggs hatch like in August, early September, and the very tiny caterpillars come out and they feed for a while. And then what they do is they'll take and they'll wrap 2 or 3 of the leaves of the host they're on into a little webbed nest. And that's where they spend the winter as a tiny caterpillar.
So how big is this little tiny?
It's anywhere from, 2 to 4 inches long.
Okay.
And, you know.
So it's multiple caterpillars.
Yeah. Oh, yes. Yeah. It's pretty much the egg mass that hatched all stays together.
I see.
And you'll look in the fall and especially in the winter, once all the leaves are off the trees, mm-hmm. and you can see, especially on oak trees, you'll see, oh, it looks like, 3 or 4 leaves are still hanging on in a cluster. Usually what that is now is the brown-tailed moth nest.
At that point, if you say you're going to go cut it or whatever, are they hairy in that allergic way?
They're hairy, but the toxin hasn't developed.
Okay.
So that they're either in the first or second instar, and they have, I think, 4, but each mold is called an instar.
Mm-hmm.
And so they've hatched, and that's the first instar. So they're out there feeding.
Right.
And depending on the situation, they don't have toxin or not enough that it does much to anybody. And they'll feed, and some of them, depending on how long when they hatch before they decide it's time to, because of daylight, to start making their nest, they may have gone into the molted and gone into the second instar. So you'll find either first or second instars in those nests. And those are the ones you clip out during the winter, because you clip one of those out and you get rid of like 200 caterpillars at a whack.
So you clip them, mm-hmm. you take them down.
Mm-hmm. Then you destroy them however you decide to destroy them.
Can you burn them on the tree?
Well, actually,
or they drop out.
You could, because once they've dropped out of the nest, that's it for them.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, individual caterpillars can't survive.
Okay.
Because actually, there's been some research on spraying trees with a material that dissolves that webbing,
mm-hmm.
because that webbing is so tough that it really protects them from the elements, the rain, the snow, and that type of thing. Can't even get through that. So they stay in there, and they're very, very protected. So some of the research, as I say, that they're looking at is can you spray something that just dissolves that silk?
Mm-hmm.
And, there's been some limited success with that, because once you've dissolved that silk, then they're exposed to the elements, and they die during the winter. They actually do have people with drones that come around, and they can clip them out of the top of the trees, because when I say you clip them, you can do that, or you can have an arborist come in and do it. But you think if you've got a 60-foot-tall oak tree, how are they going to get all the way to the top of that? So they've been using some drones, and they actually clip them, and they drop into a bucket and bring them down. And there are some, and the reason why I'm getting to it is some actually have a small torch on it, and they zap the nest with a torch.
That's worth the price of admission.
Yeah.
I would pay for that.
Yeah. But see, that's during the winter, so, it's
still cool.
Yeah.
I'm into that one.
But, it's fairly safe at that time,
yeah,
especially if you know what you're doing.
Sure. And Yeah, it's, that goes back to my mafia thing of insect prevention. You know, let's teach them a lesson.
Right.
All right. Speaking of lessons, we got to take a quick break here. It's 9:16. Oh my God, we already did an hour. We'll be back in just a few minutes with Jim, and we'll talk more. We got a lot more to talk about. Believe it or not. All right, we're back. It's 9:20. We are going to get some sunshine, I think, and that'll be good. It'll dry it out again so the ticks are not happy.
There we go.
And we've got Jim Dill from Cooperative Extension Pest Management. We're talking about brown-tail moths.
Yep.
And, we did get a question here. Any natural predators for ticks?
You know, there really isn't. They have done some work with actually a fungus that they're trying to spray,
mm-hmm.
And it's shown some promise, so there's that. But natural predators, well, anything was going to eat them, you know, birds and stuff, but nothing that, you know, zeroes in on.
We're talking about a huge population.
Yeah, right. So,
what about brown-tail moths? Are any predators of those?
Birds will eat them somewhat, but... you know, the toxin, I don't know if it bothers other mammals, to be honest, and birds. Mm-hmm. There doesn't seem to be a lot of mammals or birds that seem to eat them, because otherwise, you know, there's so many of them you can see massed on trees, you'd think there'd be something there eating them. So my guess is that toxin has actually been developed over time in that caterpillar to prevent birds and other things from eating it.
The question here, brown-tail caterpillars have two orange dots?
Correct.
Okay. All right. So, this is the guy with the crab apple trees. He says, if so, what decimated my trees were tent brown-tail moths. Well, they were in tents.
Yeah.
And they've
come out. So what he's got, he actually has the eastern tent caterpillar. If they've had, because... this time of year, the tents, usually you find them like in a crotch of a tree.
Yeah.
Whereas the brown-tail moth tents, they're during the winter times.
Okay.
And they're wrapped around a leaf.
Okay.
And this is right in the crotch. And he's absolutely right. What they do is they come out in the day in time and feed, and then at night they all come back to the nest. So an easy control for those is to destroy the tents. And an easy way to do that is just take a stick and put a nail in the end of it and stick it into the nest, around dark and twirl it. And what happens, that twirls all that silk and the caterpillars in it, and then you can do whatever. You can use it as a torch and light it on fire, or, you know, you can duck it in a bucket of soapy water or whatever. But that's an easy way to get them. And you can reach up fairly high if you've got a fairly good crab apple tree.
When I'm watching TV and I'm getting kind of bored, I'm gonna be looking for these flame throwing drones, because I think I could explain to my wife that we really should have one of those.
Right.
You know, it's important to have good tools.
Yeah, it's true.
And that's certainly got to be one of them.
Yeah.
So brown tail moth is all over the state.
It's pretty well concentrated in the south central area. You get much north of Old Town,
mm-hmm.
and it gets very, very spotty.
Mm-hmm.
We found moths You know, like in Millinocket and maybe in Southern Aroostook and over to the western part of the state, but there's not any real big infestations of it yet. So it is pretty well concentrated.
Are you expecting them to get?
I would
areas?
Expect that it will slowly spread out. There's no reason at the moment that it won't, unless we get a nice good a zoonotic of some virus or a fungus that takes them out.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, like, the weather forecast for the next week is supposed to be fairly cool and wet. And in the spring, that's exactly what you want to take out those caterpillars, even though we're getting a little late because they're getting pretty full grown. And it's easier with those type of things to kill the smaller caterpillars with the diseases.
Yeah.
And then in the fall, oddly enough, it's the flip side. You want it warm and wet in the fall to try to take out those little ones before they go into their nest. Once they get in their nest, as I said, it's pretty impenetrable.
Yeah.
And nothing can really get in.
You don't think that there is a natural limit then, that it's only in the southern part and the coastal area, that it's just a matter of time that it works its way north?
It's I don't think it's like too cold inland or whatever to and again, you know, as whether you believe in it or not, you can look right now, our spring and fall are longer.
Mm-hmm.
The winter has shortened.
Yeah.
And because of that, with that kind of extra time, this gives them extra time to move, and it's warmer.
Yeah.
And they're easy to move, you know, because the caterpillars pretty soon will be starting to look around for places to pupate. You know, they'll get in cars and, you know, underneath the fender or whatever, they'll pupate. And, you know, off you drive back up to, you know, Fort Kent. And all of a sudden, you've got a half a dozen cocoons under your car, and the moths come out, and they can start a new infestation. So, so you have to be careful.
Yeah.
Yep.
So, what else is on your radar screen in terms of critters that we don't want to know about?
Well, just before we leave brown-tailed moth, the last thing I would say is that people always ask about the reaction. And the hairs of the brown-tailed moth actually has a toxin associated with it.
Mm-hmm.
We get a lot of calls in the fall when school starts, the kids are out playing on the playground, and they come in contact with different types of what's called tussock moths. And I think you've all seen these caterpillars. They're various colors, and in the front of them, they got two tufts of hair sticking up, and in the back of them, they usually have two tufts of hair.
Yeah.
We call those pencil hairs. And those hairs just kind of will break off after if they get on you and stuff. And they're just irritating. And, you know, you get a little rash from it. But with the brown-tailed moth, those hairs actually have a toxin associated with it. Think in the terms of poison ivy, you know, it's a material that gets on you and gives you a very, very severe rash. And the bad thing about it is, as we talked earlier about instars, as they move from one instar to the next, they shed their entire skin and hair and grow a new one. Well, as those drop to the ground, they can stay in the environment for 2 or 3 years. So next year you could go out there and say, hey, look, you know, that was just great. We had some, virus come through, killed everything. I don't have any brown-tailed moths. So you start raking your leaves up under the trees and stuff, and lo and behold, you've got a bad rash again because those hairs are down there in the duff again, and they can be there for 2 or 3 years. So,
well, I look at this as an opportunity to not have to rake leaves.
I'm
a cup is half full kind of guy.
That's right. The other thing that we've been having a lot of calls on recently that is one of everybody's favorite insects, and that's carpenter ants. And the big females are out. They're flying around. Sometimes you see them with wings. Sometimes you see them just, you know, running around. And they're looking for some nice, damp wood to set up housekeeping in and start a new colony.
Mm-hmm.
So I certainly recommend to people that they see those ants. They're almost an inch long, 3/4 of an inch to 1 inch. They're big, robust, usually black ants. Sometimes they're red and black. But I take every opportunity as I see one to destroy it because that can give rise to a colony. And as we say, it does take wet wood. They like wet wood, And I know, Tom, we've talked about them 100 times here on the show.
Yeah.
They get into other things, too. They get into insulation, styrofoam insulation. They get into a lot of stuff.
Yeah. It's, over the years, I've gotten in. Occasionally, we would buy recycled insulation.
Yep.
And we would get something that was, we get one piece that was infested with ants.
Yep.
And it would be so bad, you could hear them. The little, there's so many of them. I don't think they were chewing. I think it was just their legs moving around.
Yeah.
It was creepy.
Yeah.
Excuse me. I got to take a break here because my computer, my studio computer just died. So so I guess I got to hit the restart button and see what hilarity that ensues there. So we'll take the break now, and I always have backup tunes. So we'll be right back. It is Hot and Cold Saturday morning. Stay with us. Okay, we're back. It's 9:35, and we're flying without a net. The studio computer just crashed. We have too many computers here. I'm not sure which is which. So we're going to do it without it. We could do that. Phone number is 1-800-966-1039. We will not take text messages at this point, but Jim is still here. That's what's important.
We'll do it the old-fashioned way.
The old-fashioned way we talk. Way back when Dick and I started the show, we were in a different radio station, and there was this guy who bought the station from the original guy who started the talk radio thing, and the transmitter failed. It was in the building where we were, and we're using the backup transmitter. And about every 15 minutes, I had to go hit the reset circuit breaker on the transmitter. And Dick and I would just sit there and talk. We didn't care if the radio worked or not, the transmitter worked. We were just having, doing our usual thing where we just sit and talk about whatever interested us. But we have important things to talk about.
Sure we do.
And going back to bloodsuckers because, hey, that's fun, you're not seeing a lot about it, but I'm sure they're still around, and that's bed bugs.
It is interesting because you're right, Tom. As I just said, ticks has taken over, but, 6 years ago, our whole show would be about bed bugs.
Yeah.
People calling about bed bugs and that type of thing. They're still around, but nothing like they were 5 or 6 years ago. For mm-hmm. the 3 or 4 years there, probably started about 10 years ago to, 6 years ago. That's all there were. They were everywhere. And for some reason, you don't hear about them as much now.
Yeah.
I still check my hotel room or whatever when I travel. We get maybe 2 or 3 calls a year. When I used to get 2 or 3 calls a week or more.
Yeah.
And so it's really, really slowed down.
Maybe the good news is that these institutions where you rent rooms mm-hmm. Have picked up on that and are dealing with it in a better way.
It could be. You never know what the difference is because for the most part, as I talk to people, practices haven't changed a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And travel certainly, and it may have had something to do very truthfully with the pandemic when all the travel slowed down.
Yep.
People weren't moving because, you talk about, you can jump on a plane in Bangor and be anywhere in the world probably within 12 or 15, 20 hours.
Yeah.
And so it's pretty easy to go to some other place, pick up bed bugs and bring them back.
Yeah.
And maybe because of that slowing down and people controlling them locally, it's knocked the population back. Yeah. So.
Oh, we got some phone calls. I guess we'll take phone calls now that we can't do anything else. Good morning. You're on The Voice of Maine.
Yeah. Hey, Tom.
Hi.
Hey, Jim.
Yes.
Jim, you are a Maine treasure, let me tell you.
That's true.
The question I had today was, can you use 7 around your yard, around the borders of your yard, to control ticks?
Actually, yes, Cobrel is one of the materials that is recommended for control of ticks. It's actually a fairly good material. The big caution about using 7 is you want to make sure you don't put it anywhere where there's going to be bees, because 7/Cobrel is very, very toxic to bees. So don't spray it, any flowers that are in bloom or that type of thing. Or if you got, honeybees for whatever reason is around something. Other than that, though, yes, Cobrel can be used. And I would only use it, as I said before, as a border spray. You don't need to spray your whole lawn with it, unless you have some other insect problem you're trying to control. But Cobrel it has to be sprayed several times. But
what about these time-release permethrin derivatives? Are they anything you...
There are when you say permethrin, what permethrin is? It's a synthetic pyrethrin,
right?
And pyrethrin is comes from the chrysanthemum flower, and it's very, very short lived. It's a matter of hours and it's gone. And the synthetic versions of it, as you say, either slow release or it's just that they have a long half life. So yes, there are some of those materials, the synthetic pyrethrins, that can work very well also on.
What about timing on the 7? Is it better to do it morning, evening? How would you?
I would do that in the morning. And the reason why I say that is, even though ticks can, you can get a tick on you 24 hours a day, they are most active in the morning when the moisture and the humidity is high. As the humidity drops or it gets sunnier during the day and hotter and the humidity may go down, then the ticks go lower and lower or they don't come out. So I would start in the morning because if it's a good day, they're going to be out questing, so they're going to come in contact with that material. So I would suggest in the morning, yes.
Great. Hey, Jim, stay healthy. Take
Thank
care.
You. Thanks.
Thank you. Appreciate your call. Phone number is 1-800-966-1039. We're talking with Jim Dill. What else do we want to talk about?
Well, we were just starting to touch a little bit on carpenter ants.
Yes.
Before we can go back to maybe some other bloodsuckers. But as I said, right now is when the queens are out and active, and you want to be looking for them, because if you've got any wet wood around your house, stumps, rotten logs, and what will happen with them is sometimes, you say, oh, well, I got a carpenter ant infestation in a stump 10, 20 feet from my house, no big deal. Eventually, that nest can move, and it can be a satellite. That could be the major nest, and you know it's there.
Mm-hmm.
But all of a sudden, they can make their way to your house, and if you've got some, wet wood, they'll start in there too. So if you know you have carpenter ants around, even though you think, oh, well, they're out in the woods there, I know where they are, no big deal. Control them.
Yeah.
Because they do move.
I the house I'm in now, when we bought it, there was a 2x12 sill over a garage door, and somebody had flashed it, covered it with, it was vinyl siding, covered it with some aluminum.
Yep.
But didn't flash it, and the flashing had fallen off, and it looked like really serious Swiss cheese.
Yeah.
They were into that, and it was too deep. It was 2x12s, and they got into that. And fortunately, there was the second one was still somewhat intact, so the floor didn't collapse.
Yeah,
but it was pretty significant. And I think about this a lot from a construction point of view. If I'm building a house in a wooded area in particular, I really like the idea of using pressure-treated lumber just to mitigate that whole issue of carpenter ants. Not to say they wouldn't get into some other part of the building, and I've seen that. We've had them in the office we're in at work. They got into the walls and weren't eating wood as much as they just were habitating in the or living in the fiberglass insulation.
Yeah.
It was nice and warm. They were chewing on some sills,
yep,
which we replaced, but they were through the whole building in the walls.
Wow. Yeah.
And it was a mess.
Yeah, and in some places too, you've seen, like when you talk about, you know, in a wooded area, people take the scraps, you know, the ends and the pieces, and they just bury them nearby.
Yep. Yeah.
And that's not a good idea either.
No.
Because that just starts to slowly, you know, gets wet and starts to rot, and it attracts carpenter ants. Yep. And it might just be a few feet from your house.
So the thing that I suggest to folks is the serious treatment is borates.
Yep.
It's a product called Timbor, T-I-M-B-O-R, which you can mix with water and you can spray it. But a simpler one that's easy for you at any supermarket you can get it is Arm & Hammer a Boraxo, and sprinkle that around the area where you see them. It's not perfect, but it's better than nothing, and it's easy to get. It's probably $6 a box now. It used to be $3, but it, you can, it, and there's a little bit of time release to it because it's granulated. So, and I remember doing a house inspection years ago. This lady had not a really good insulation job done around her perimeter. And she told me once a year she sprinkled that around and kept them at bay. If she didn't do it, they were all over the place.
Yep.
So.
Yep. Because that actually is a stomach poison.
Yep.
If they, you know, groom themselves or whatever, and it does kill them, kills the colony.
Yeah. Yep. So it's a cheap date, and it does a good job. Let's go over to line two. Good morning. You're on the Voice of Maine.
Hey, Tom, I was wondering if you could ask Jim about the expanded emergency order for the emerald ash borer. Say if a guy had a woodlot in Waldo County, if he can move the ash firewood.
Yeah, that just came out just in the last couple of weeks. And what it is if you're in a quarantine area, then you either have to, I think you have to actually talk to the Department of Agriculture, Conservation, and Forestry before you move the wood. I think you actually have to get permits.
Wow.
Yeah.
So where do they inhabit in the tree? Are they in the bark and the cambium?
Yeah, they get underneath and they actually can bore right in.
Into the wood.
Lay their eggs on the bark, and the newly emerged larvae bore right into the wood, and they tunnel all through it.
And so we have quarantined areas.
Oh, yeah. We've had several. The emerald ash borer has been in northern Maine and southern Maine for a long time. Mm-hmm. And, you know, there's been big things about not moving firewood when you're camping. That's been in place for 2 or 3 years now or more. And now, as he just said, this one just came out. I just saw it, so I don't know a lot about it. But it's very recent, within the last couple of weeks.
And emerald ash borer, just ash or any other
It's
species?
Mostly ash, yeah. And it kills the trees. Right. And when it bores in, and eventually will kill a tree.
Is that an introduced species?
Yeah.
Of course.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Let's go over to line one. Good morning. You're on the Voice of Maine.
Yeah. Good morning, Tom and Jim. I want to go back to the brown tail situation, if I may.
Yep. Sure.
Well, I have a seasonal place on Damariscotta Lake, which, of course, is the mid-coast and not a great place for those things. And several years ago, I had what Clay Kirby at Cooperative Extension described. It sounds like you've got the Stephen King level of these things. And then all of a sudden, they were gone.
Yep.
And I talked to Ellie Groden, the entomologist at UMaine, and she said, it was the fungus.
Yep.
And we had a very cold, wet spring. And I haven't had them too bad since then. This year I have kind of an annoying level, not huge numbers at once, but they keep coming back. And what's disturbing in particular is I'm finding them inside the house, which I have never seen.
Right.
And there's, you know, they're kind of all in the same area. They're on the floor, towards the front of the building. And, you know, I might have found 20 of them, say, over the period of the last 2 weeks or so. is it possible that one of the actual moths can get in there and lay eggs? Because I don't see any other way they're getting in.
Yeah, the answer to that is yes and no. I mean, a moth could get in and lay eggs in its kind of death throes.